Welcome to The Wired Wig, demystifying tech law trends and educating about law in tomorrow's society. Hello and welcome back to The Wired Wig. My name is Annabelle Pemberton, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking to Ilona Salo, who works at Tesla as an intern in data protection law. During this podcast, we're going to give an outline of Ilona's background into how she got into tech and law. We're going to talk a bit about AI and how it might potentially change society. We're going to move on to what life is like at Tesla for someone working in data protection law, looking at the technicalities around DPIAs. We'll be comparing things like startup culture versus law firms and answering some questions about some myths around getting into law and technology careers. And then finally, Ilona is going to provide an extensive guide and resources in how you can become more aware about how the law and technology interact. And really, she has provided so many resources. So thank you, Ilona, for all of these resources. This has really made the episode very resourceful for any law students who really want to prepare themselves for working in a startup that's working with law and technology, or working for a law firm but wants to be more technology oriented. So enjoy the podcast, and if you have any questions, feel free to ask them through the Instagram account, The Wired Wig, or also direct any questions directly through the anchor page, The Wired Wig. So thank you for joining me on the podcast today, Ilona. We're going to jump straight into the show now. So how did you get into the technology and law world?
Well, thank you for having me on this podcast. I think I got into the technology and law accidentally. I think a lot to do where I am right now is due to a series of like happy accidents and unplanned events. I think there was never a moment where I decided that I will go into technology and law. It was more of like a gradual process. And then I was already like really deep into it. And I realized like, actually, this is what I'm currently doing. And this is what I want to continue doing. And well, I think my story is quite similar to yours. So I did my bachelor's in University of Warwick. I did it in law and business. And even though my experience at Warwick was great, but I didn't really click with the law subjects. I don't know, did you have this as well, where like you were studying property law cases from like the 18th century and you were like, why am I studying this?
Yes, exactly the same with me.
Yeah, so I'm not sure about the situation now at Warwick, but at least back then the optional law modules didn't appeal either. And then the Brexit vote happened, and you know, I was very uncertain whether I wanted to stay in UK, so I moved back to Finland. I took a year off and started really thinking, like, is law for me? It was quite like, you know, not boring, but it was very rigid and nothing really piqued my interest. Like, I didn't want to go into trust law or property law or anything like that. And then I applied to business masters, and I applied to legal masters in Helsinki because the education is free. So might as well, if you don't know what to do, then I'm always of the opinion that like you should study more to figure it out. And then I got accepted into all of the masters, but I ended up taking the international business law masters in Helsinki. Even though I thought I was going to be done with law, but I was just like, maybe I'll just give it another chance. And then I also think you mentioned this in your first podcast episode, that in Helsinki University, there's a lot of different modules, like really great optional modules that you can take relating to artificial intelligence and law, and then information law, and then like just purely data protection courses and stuff like that. So I thought that the course descriptions were super interesting, and then I took them, and the rest is history.
Fantastic. And I completely resonate with that as well, because when I was studying at the University of Helsinki on my Erasmus year, I was just blown away by all the different options that are on offer. And I completely agree, they just weren't on offer to me when I was studying in the UK. And I think this is common across a lot of UK universities. Mm-hmm. So
So for you, what really interests you about the interaction between law and technology?
Well, when I started studying law, I thought that I would go into criminal law because I was really interested in human rights. So this element of human rights is also present in like how law and technology interact. So I think that is one of my like main interests. So for example, with privacy law, there's the obvious element of individuals' right to private life and how government and companies can protect that. But then there's also these interesting questions where you need to balance the rights of the individual and balance the other people's rights. For example, I just read a case, a Finnish case by the Deputy Data Protection Ombudsman, where there was a question of whether a convicted criminal has the right to ask Google to delist a search link that leads to the criminal's personal data. And then there was a discussion between the balancing the rights of this convicted criminal and then the public's right to the access of this information for their own safety, because this convicted criminal had been convicted of like child rape and child pornography possession. So that is in the you know, the public's interest, of course, to know this. So like I really enjoy reading and debating about this kind of balancing of the human rights of different participants. And then, of course, I am a huge sci-fi fan and I watch a lot of sci-fi shows and movies, especially related to the advancement of technology. I know everyone in like technology and law field gives the example of Matrix, but, you know, I grew up watching Matrix, so it's just very interesting what we can do with technology in the future and like what the dangers are of technology.
Yes, it's definitely, I know for me, it was very similar that I suddenly saw this interaction between human rights and technology. And I sort of had this fear as well that there weren't people, well, there are people in the industry who do balance both legal law and technology together, but that there were a lack of these people. So if mm-hmm. I went more into the legal and tech field, then perhaps I can become more of an expert in this way. And of course, we can see with technological advances, there's this demand for more and more lawyers to yeah. be qualified in this way.
Do you think that it is quite like people are fear-mongering, like people are scared of what like artificial intelligence can achieve in the future for humanity? Do you think the fear mongering is like, or that like the fear is justified in a way? What are your own like personal beliefs?
I think that's a really interesting question, because when I first started reading about the sort of powers of AI, it was just very new to me. It was when I was studying in Helsinki and AI was having another boom, and after this, I realized that, of course, this has happened many times in the past before. And when it was coming across, it was more AI is going to take away your job and these sort of headlines. And then when I actually really looked deep into it, and I didn't just look at the media headlines around it, it was more that, hang on, we could actually use AI to really improve what we currently do. And it's not that it's going to be taking away lawyers' jobs, just things are going to be different when we're using AI.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like the legal profession will change into more like consulting type things where these maybe like not boring, but like very repetitive tasks such as like contract management, they're going to be automated. Then like that will disappear. And then that would free up a lot of like lawyers' time and then focus on other aspects. So I think, yeah. Yes. I think there's full potential, but then of course there is the risk of like if AI becomes too intelligent or intelligent or something.
yes, of course. And I remember feeling the same when I was reading one of Richard Suzukin's books. Mm-hmm. I just had this feeling that, okay, so if that can be automated, then what happens to current trainees and how would that work? And I guess that's sort of, even though the fear is bad, even though the fear from the media is bad in that way, it did push me into considering alternatives in my career. And I suppose that leads us nicely into the fact that you're not working for a law firm and you're working at Tesla. So where did you work before you started to work at Tesla, and what really was your journey to the company?
Yeah, so like I mentioned before, I really thought I was going to go into criminal law. So my first legal position was at a council in Mississippi that gives legal representation to clients that have been sentenced to death. So I spent a summer in Mississippi and I was working on these super interesting cases, and it was like one of my best experiences so far. But then the fact that the appeals can take 2 years, you're working on them for so long just on this one specific thing, and then it might not, like, you might not see how it plays out in the end. Like, for example, as I was only there for 2 months, all of the cases that I worked on, like, I didn't see a result. So that kind of made me realize that I enjoy working in an environment where it's more fast-paced and more dynamic. So then I kind of put criminal law on hold and moved back to Finland, and this was when I was like deciding what I wanted to do in life. And then while I started my master's in Helsinki, I was working as a customer service specialist at a startup tech company. Made them GDPR compliant, and I was writing the privacy policies, and then also I did some contracts relating to softwares, etc. So I got like kind of a feel to tech and like tech lingo. Especially working as a customer service specialist, I was working very, very closely with the developers. So then I kind of had to, you know, by accidentally, I had to learn their lingo and like understand what they were talking about. And then also, then I started working for a iGaming software company, and I started doing contract management work for them. I created a contract database for them and then managed their contracts. And then I had to read all of the contracts. There was like hundreds of contracts, and it was all very like, also had a lot of tech lingo there and very specific stuff related to softwares. And then I continued there as a compliance officer. And yeah, and then I started working with Tesla.
Fantastic. That's such a journey that you've had. And I can definitely see similarities. And that was how I transitioned as well. So I didn't join the company thinking necessarily that I would be doing tech law. It worked out being such a good option for me. So definitely. And now you're working at Tesla. What do you do on a day-to-day basis in the company?
Well, I'll just start by saying that like my internship experience at Tesla has been very great so far. So like usually when you hear the word internship, you think that you won't get a lot of responsibility and you perform quite basic tasks, but that really hasn't been the case for me at Tesla. I've gotten actually a lot of responsibility and ownership over like certain processes that I thought I would never have. So I would describe my daily tasks as basically very, very related to GDPR and CCPA, of course, because I'm a data privacy intern. So I do it first thing in the morning. I handle data access requests from customers and sometimes authorities. And then I also have performed data protection impact assessments to evaluate potential privacy risks of processes, Tesla's internal processes. And then also I've performed a couple of data mapping exercises. So talking to some specific Tesla team and seeing kind of like investigating what kind of data they handle and what systems they use, and then just recording that because that is a GDPR requirement. And then also I've been partaking in GDPR trainings for Tesla teams. That's not my my actual area in Tesla. It's performed by my coworker, but it's been just a very fantastic opportunity for me to like get in on that as well, and then participate in the trainings and prepare some material. And yeah, those are basically like the basic tasks I have. But of course, there are a lot of smaller side projects as well that I've participated in.
But that sounds great. It really gives a sort of broad overview of what your role is in data protection in a company like Tesla, which is just fantastic, because I think a lot of people don't realize that these roles are in these companies and that they are available to law students as well.
So you mentioned that part of your day-to-day job is also carrying out DPIAs or data protection impact assessments. Would you be able to tell us a bit more about what that involves?
Yeah, so GDPR mandates that certain processing activities and new technologies need a legal analysis to be done from a data protection perspective before these processes or new technologies are implemented. So basically, just a quick run through what I would do when I'm conducting a DPIA is that based on the GDPR measures and guidelines issued by different data protection authorities, I prepare questions in advance beforehand that I would like to tackle when I'm interviewing the relevant stakeholders that are going to implement the processes. So I get in touch with the relevant stakeholders that are the process owners, and then I interview them and ask them all these kind of questions. For example, what data is to be collected and why they are collecting. So basically, what is the business and what's the legal reason? Mm-hmm. And then how the data is stored and what security measures are going to be in place. And just to basically see if there are any privacy risks or potential privacy risks in there. And then if there are any potential privacy risks, then we would propose mitigating controls for those specific risks.
Working in tech is very different to working in a law firm, at least from my experience. And would you say that it is different from working in a law firm?
Yeah, so I do not actually have any experience in working in a law firm per se, so I can't really speak on that behalf, but I can really talk about the culture. Even though Tesla is a multinational company, it really feels like a startup. I can basically talk to anyone, shoot them a message if I have a question. Well, obviously I might not like contact Elon directly, but then, you know, like high level managers, whereas I think the corporate culture, there is usually a very rigid hierarchy.
Yes.
And then of course, in a tech company, you really need to have certain skills, maybe like I talked about the tech lingo previously. So during my customer service period where I worked with this startup, I really got to learn that skill, like the lingo and what all of the terms mean. And that has really helped me working in Tesla, and then also at my previous company, the iGaming software company. Mm-hmm. So it just makes it more easier for you to like understand what the tech people are saying, and then not having to interrupt meetings and be like, hey, actually, what do you mean by this word? And then one thing that I've noticed with all of the tech companies that I've worked for is that the tech companies are usually very dynamic and processes change and develop very quickly. So I think one key skill is the ability to adapt. And I don't know, what do you think? I mean, of course, adaptability is also a very good, important skill to have if you work in a law firm, but I think the processes, they're more like set in stone in the corporate world and very hard to change. I'm not sure, don't quote me on this, but that's the stereotype, at least, that exists about like law firms and banks.
You have this startup culture that I think can be maintained in larger companies. And part of this is that you have this flexibility in how you're doing things, and what you're doing 1 month, it might not be done the same way the next month. And
exactly.
So it can't be so complicated, because then it's going to be impossible to update. And also that everything changes in the company so quickly. It's a lot to get your head around, especially if you're used to working just with lawyers in a law firm.
Yeah, and yeah, definitely I agree with that. You can't get too attached to some processes. So like, even if you create a process by yourself and you're super proud of it, then like next month it might, you know, you might need to change it a lot or like completely disregard the process. So it's adaptability is a very, very important skill in a tech company, at least from my experience. I mean, of course, there might be very like well-established tech companies where it is kind of like a same kind of a corporate culture as well.
Mm-hmm. So for some law students, they see the need that they need to be able to code to work in a technology company. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, so I agree. There's a lot of debate around whether lawyers should learn coding or learn data science. I don't think it is necessary. However, I do think it is very helpful depending on what you want to do. And also it will, this relates back to me saying how I learned the coder lingo. So it's very useful in a way that you do have to interact with coders and software developers. So then understanding the lingo and how, like how they think in a way through that, it would be useful. For example, if you're interested in regulating artificial intelligence, I do think coding is somewhat important, because artificial intelligence area is so complex. So if you really want to understand the nuances of artificial intelligence and how to regulate it, then I think in that situation, learning at least basics of coding would be beneficial for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. And I can definitely resonate on learning the technical terms. I remember the first time the developers started talking about this mystical thing called an API. And I was like, what are they talking about? And I was very lucky that I found one of the few videos online at the time about what an API is. And it was, I'm very good at explaining.
Life-changing.
Yes, literally. So just to finish off the podcast, are there any resources, lawyers who are wishing to pivot into legal tech, or law students who are currently studying can use to really get an idea about the legal tech industry?
Yeah, so actually, like, I have a couple of examples, and these are like based on my experience. So I would first like to talk about courses. I think the best way to get into law and technology is to take courses related to it. If your university does not offer them, there are also online courses that you can do free or not free. I always believe in like investing in education, even if you have to pay for it. It's very good. Mm-hmm. And then, like, for example, in August, I'm starting a course on artificial intelligence ethics and philosophy, because I just want to know more about like the, you know, human rights aspects of artificial intelligence. And then, of course, reading is very, very like easy and very cost-effective method also to get into it. So academic journals are of course very good if you already have like a specific area that you want to find out about, but then there are also books, audiobooks and online books that you can read. For example, I just finished Toby Ord's The Precipice book, and this talks about the existential risks to humanity, and one of the things he talks about is the future of artificial intelligence and whether it poses a risk to humans' existence. And then also I can recommend a book called Invisible Woman by Caroline Perez if you're interested in data bias and how data has a gender bias, because like most of algorithms and data is made by white men. So that's a very like interesting human rights aspect as well, if you're into data bias. And then, of course, attending conferences. There are loads of different conferences in all over Europe. Usually conferences have student discounts or are free. For example, I was part of setting up a conference about how artificial intelligence will shape the legal sector's future. So volunteering, setting up conferences or attending conferences is also a very good method of getting into it, and also for networking purposes. And I mentioned volunteering with the conference, but you can also volunteer with any other type of organizations. You can shoot them a message like, hey, I have this idea, can I help you with it? And usually they don't pay, but this is the reality of a student. If you want to get experience, you have to sometimes do things for free. So for example, now I'm currently volunteering with NOYB to translate Finnish Data Protection Authority cases into English. NOYB is a nonprofit organization co-founded by Max Schrems. So if you're interested in privacy law and you can speak another European language, I can highly recommend shooting them a message like, can I help you with translation? And then of course, like moot court. I don't know, did you, Annabelle, take part of the Helsinki's information law moot court when you were in Helsinki?
So I did Jessup, and it's really interesting because our last episode was actually on online disputes because one of my friends did the Viz. And we were talking about that, that yes, that is an excellent way to gain insights into the industry, because when you're actually in a moot situation, you learn so much about the subject because you need to research to be able to reply to judges' questions, mm-hmm. to respond to the other side that you're mooting against. So it's just an excellent way to really immerse yourself in the subject.
Yeah, definitely. And then I also think that the Helsinki Information Law Moot Court founded by Tobias, I think it's open for other students and outside of Finland. So that is also a good opportunity to look into if you're in, for example, Warwick University and you want to expand your knowledge on information law. So yeah, I think that is my list. And oh, one more thing. There's this great website called artificiallawyer.com, and they have a newsletter subscription, and I've subscribed to them. They often, I think they send like once or twice a day a newsletter, but it's very good in keeping you up to date with news regarding to artificial intelligence and other aspects of tech law. So I would highly recommend subscribing to the newsletter. They also have a section for students, like how you can get into tech law. So check that out.
Fantastic. That's all really insightful. You gave so many pointers. Thank you. And I think this is exactly the advice and information that I think a lot of law students need right now, because you're right, a lot of universities don't have these courses. And it is slightly concerning because this is going to be an area of the law that students will need to be aware of, as technology plays a more important part in our society. But I'm sure the education around that will start to change. So we're really lucky that there are these free online resources, and then if you do have the ability to pay as well, there's also some brilliant courses out there as well.
Yeah, definitely. And then I'd just like to plug that in Turku, it's a city in Finland, mm-hmm. They have an international master's that is dedicated just for law and technology. So if you're interested in pursuing a master's in this, it's free for Europeans, so might as well try and apply there.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you very much for talking to me. This was a great opportunity to really hear the experience that you've done in the past and how you've got to where you are today, and it's been great talking to you. Thank you
so much for having me on this podcast. It's super cool. I wish I had this podcast when I was studying in Warwick University, but it's very great that you're starting it now.
I'm Annabelle Pemberton, and you have just listened to the Wired Wig podcast, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. If you have any suggestions for upcoming podcasts or different ideas of who could be on the show, we are open to suggestions at the Wired Wig page on Anchor, where you can message us, as well as messaging us directly through our Instagram profile at The Wired Wig. As always, if you liked what you just heard, be sure to follow this account on Spotify and follow The Wired Wig on Instagram for the latest tech lore news and updates.